Darian Durant prior to the game in BC.
So, I hope that coach can give us a little bit more freedom and trust us a little bit more to go downfield because we've had a lot of success with it. And, hopefully he turns us loose and we're able to do that.
A public plea for a little more of an opportunity to hook up down the field with, among others, Ernest Jackson. Welcome back, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. You know how that turned out in BC. And today, as first reported on Twitter by Tony Marinaro here of TSN 690, Jacques Chapdelaine fired, Noel Thorpe also fired. Cavis Reed, in addition to being the general manager, is now the interim head coach. He made it clear today he is not looking to become the permanent head coach, interim for the rest of the season, of the Montreal Alouettes, who host the Ottawa Red Blacks in town on Sunday. Cavis was with us earlier.
It was a part of it. We're not going to be on air and lie to anyone. It was part of it. It is about, in all cases, it's about production. It's about wins. It's about making certain that there's always an upward climb and that there isn't a significant drop-off or a significant regression. And when you're playing divisional opponents like we have played two in the last 3 weeks and we didn't really have an opportunity to win those games, those are things that really make you perk up and say, okay, is there something intrinsically wrong? Is there something foundationally wrong that we need to address? Sometimes cosmetics work, but sometimes you have to get to the root of the problem and look at it as a foundational issue.
There was Kevis's response when I asked him about those comments made by Darian Durant. Along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick until 7, much more for a full hour. This will be great. Sideline to sideline, Joey Alfieri and his co-host every Wednesday at 7, Kyrie's Hebert in studio for a full hour ahead of Noel Butler Oranges at halftime. I mentioned the game on Sunday. Coming to town, how about that for timing? To work the game, he is with us every Wednesday at this time. Mr. Gord Miller of TSN, how are you?
I'm well. I'm pretty sure this isn't true, but it feels like every time I come to Montreal to a game, they fire their coach.
Well, actually, as Mitch Gallo reported earlier today, Gallo, you could repeat it.
Yeah, it's the Alouettes are the first team in CFL history to fire their coach 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
How about
that? It
feels
like every time they do, I do the next game.
That is not what you want to be known for.
No.
That kind of record.
I don't want to be. There was a couple of years ago, I remember Toronto, the Maple Leafs, like three teams they beat fired their coach the next game.
It's the last straw. Oh, times have changed. Huh? Times have changed.
We can't lose to them.
Well, and you look at the standings in the East and you know why they're doing this at this time. It's still up for grabs.
And I watched the game last week. They just didn't look like they were on the same page. They don't. That's not the kind of game that Darian Durant wants to play. I don't blame that all on the head coach, but he is an offensive guy, and it just didn't look like, it looked like Durant wanted to play chess and they were playing checkers.
Right. Yeah, and Ernest Jackson. I mean, that was a big offseason acquisition. The guy who wins the Grey Cup for Ottawa, and I don't want to say he's a spare part here, but this is not why they got him. We haven't seen why they got him.
No, it's a strange thing, right? And it's such a quarterback driven league that your quarterback needs to be doing what he does best to have a chance.
Now, Gord, I'm asking this with Jacques Chapdelaine in mind, but it could apply to hockey as well. When a coach has such a strong belief that his system and his philosophy is going to work, and he keeps trying to sell it to the players, and the wins aren't coming, it must be a recipe for a disaster internally when you're trying to sell something and the players are kind of looking at you strangely. But at least if the wins are behind you, it's much easier to sell it.
Yeah, I totally agree, Rod. And I think that's one of the great sort of conflicts we see in the modern era of sports is the collision between management, coaches, and players. And you're right. There's a lot of coaches that have a very specific idea of how they want the game played, and they will continue to try to play it regardless of the personnel they have. And we've seen lots of examples of that in the NHL, that they just won't adjust, and they tend not to last. To me, the best coaches are the ones who are able to adjust their style, who are able to say, okay, I've got a speed team, we're playing a fast game. I've got a heavy team, we're playing a heavy game. And I think the best ones do that. The worst ones are the ones who keep pounding that square peg, trying to make it fit in the round hole.
I'm curious if, first of all, and this is not a gratuitous plug, but I can't go to this part of the conversation without asking if you have subscribed to The Athletic.
I have, yeah.
Good for you. Thank you very much.
No, I'm an original subscriber. Yeah, I just renewed, actually. My subscription just came out.
I appreciate that. And so you have probably saw this week the terrific interview one-on-one with Arpan Basu and Max Pacioretty. Yeah. And Pacioretty was talking about, number one, some differences in Julien versus Therrien tactically. You'll see less of Pacioretty, for example, flat-footed at the opposing blue line, chipping the puck in. They want him to carry it and create some speed going through the neutral zone, not just chip and chase it. And the other one is he sounded like a caller to the Del Mar postgame show. We've got the best goalie in the world. We have maybe the best shutdown defenseman in the world. Why not take a few more offensive chances?
Yeah, I think that there is that. And I think the problem is players always want to play offense, right? Most players always want to go for it, right? We should play a more open style. And the problem with that is a lot of the times you'll get beat if you're not good enough. Claude Julien is a defense-first guy, but offensive players have flourished under him.
Yeah, that's so an important distinction to make.
Right. So this is not a guy who's going to take a 40-goal scorer and turn him into a 20-goal scorer. Offensive players have done very well for Claude Julien. But I would describe him as being a little bit from the Scotty Bowman school, where from the red line back, you do what I say. From the red line in, do what you want.
Yeah, there is a need. I think it's pretty basic. I understand structure and all that, but when you have especially a gifted offensive player, allow them to freelance, which means once in a while they're going to be caught out of position. Once in a while they're going to cough up the puck. But by and large, at the end of the season, you're going to come out on top.
And the object of the game is still to outscore the opposition. It's not to be scored on less. And there's an important distinction there. You still have to try to score. And there was a long time in the NHL where, and I don't want to pin it on Jacques Lemaire and Jacques Martin, but certainly their style of make the fewest mistakes was prevalent. And I certainly didn't enjoy it. And I think we're seeing more of that creativity being permitted and encouraged in the game. And I think it's good for the sport. You know, now there are times, and I'll sort of veer this towards, you know, the Galchenyuk conversation, where if a player can't do things, if the coaching staff doesn't think a player is good enough defensively, then they have to cut his minutes. I think Galchenyuk's a center. I've said that to you before. But two longtime NHL head coaches, the management and presumably the management staff and coaching staff, don't think Galchenyuk is. So I guess in his case, when you weigh it, they think the defensive deficiencies outweigh the offensive prowess.
Mistakes tend to linger more if you don't win the championship than what you're supposed to be doing as an offensive player. I'm kind of talked out. I'm glad you'll be.
Yeah.
This will be the well. Actually, Ray Ferraro is going to join us on Tuesday. So after we talk to Ray on Tuesday, that'll be it with Galchenyuk. But Gallo, I know you wanted to jump in.
But it won't be Mitch.
No, of course.
This is going to go on all year. This is especially if the Canadians have trouble scoring early. This is going to be the narrative for Montreal.
Well, Gord, when
like it or not, it is.
When you look at the Boston Bruins team that Coach Julien coached to a Stanley Cup and compare it to this Canadiens team, how different are they really? I mean,
there's no Patrice.
There's
Bergeron.
No Bergeron and Krejci, but other than that,
Mitch, you can't say other than that because that was such a key part of their team. That 1-2 punch drove their team.
But Vezina Trophy winner, your best player was their goalie.
Yeah. Well, interesting enough, the guy they tried to give away the year before.
Well, how many times did he was?
They tried to give Tim Thomas away the year before, and no one would take him.
Yeah, people forget that the opening game of that season, they were overseas, right? And Tuukka Rask was their starter. Yeah.
Well, Rask was coming off the great year.
And then Tim Thomas went in and won game two of that series, and then he stole the job, basically. Didn't stop. But anyway, I think Gallo wanted to go through the roster here. Is that what you're doing?
Well, I just see a lot of comparables. You know,
Weber and Chara,
Seguin and Drouin, Marchand and Gallagher, and this is just going off the top. Like I see the defense, not a whole lot of puck movers on the defense, but some quality defenders. I don't know. I see a lot of similarities between the coach, the team that he coached.
They're missing Patrice Bergeron. There's nobody even close to that.
I just don't know, Mitch, like, if you can make the comparison, because to be honest, those two players down the middle were such game changers for them. The year before, when Boston blew the 3-0 series lead to Philadelphia and lost in seven, they also led game 7-3-0 and lost it. But the turning point in the series was game 4 when Mike Richards hit David Krejci with a clean hit at center ice and broke his wrist. And the loss of Krejci changed the dynamic completely for the Bruins.
If Thomas Plekanec was 28 or 30 instead of 35 and coming off back-to-back down offensive years, you could slot those two as similar. But that, it's not. It's not the case.
Montreal doesn't have near that 1-2 punch of Bergeron and Krejci. So for me, the comparison doesn't work because of that difference.
Sorry, Gallo.
Sorry, Mitch.
Some time now to just go about learning Cole Julian's style of play. I'm sure Julian's going to spend enough time in training camp, and if not, over the course of summer, they may have gotten together to discuss what the systems are and what the expectations are. But I think it's a very wise choice to put him out of the middle, where he's expected to be a far more responsible hockey player than I think he is currently capable of.
All right, so Aaron Ward's view on the Galchenyuk. So let me ask you, now that we know that Drouin will get the opportunity to play alongside Max Pacioretty and who knows who on the right side as a number one centerman for this team, do you think it could work?
Yeah, I do. I think Drouin is a very creative guy. Sees the ice well enough to pass to both wings. Has enough scoring touch to be more than just a disher, to be a guy that other teams will have to respect for his goal scoring. Yeah, for sure he does. And I think that, you know, funny enough, I mean, one of the criticisms internally in Tampa was that he wasn't good enough defensively. Now, he's a young guy, and that comes for a while, but of course he can. I think Drouin Galchenyuk could be fine 1-2, but again, I think we have to defer at some point, and I'm not saying be deferential blindly, but obviously enough people have looked at this and made this decision. They must know something that, well, they do know things we don't. Obviously, they're in the room. They're looking at video every day. They see things that we don't.
With Gord Miller every Wednesday after 6 on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Tickets coming up in a few minutes to see Bruce Coburn in concert at Club Soda next Tuesday night. Rod?
What, if anything, would you say is going to be the greatest advantage for Claude Julien when it comes to having a full offseason and a full training camp with this group?
Like, first and foremost, to know what he's got, to know behind what he has in the NHL, what's coming. To get a look at training camp and see, okay, like, is this guy close? Is this, you know, how close is Charles Hudon, for example?
Good question.
Right? Like, is he ready to play? So Julien wouldn't have known last year because he would only have known what he heard. Now he'll see him in person, get an idea of what kind of player he is, and see if he can play every day in the NHL. And if not, can he play 40 games? So I think that's the big advantage of starting training camp is getting a full look at the organization and seeing where you're at. Because it's one thing, you know, it's one thing to dump on a guy and beat on a guy for not being good enough. If you have no one behind him, what's the point? Now you're just beating him, right? But if there's someone behind him, you can say, you know what, if you don't pick up the pace, there's a guy down in the American League who's going to take your spot.
Were you in Edmonton in September of 87?
Yeah. Okay. Were you asking about the Canada Cup?
Yeah, well, this is the 30th anniversary of the forgotten overtime goal.
Yeah.
Raymond Bork. Bork into Gretzky. Gretzky cutting in. Center to Lemieux. Got it wide. Drops behind the net. Up to Murphy. Murphy to Gretzky. Hit the post. Rebound.
Same guys on the ice, but that if they don't score, they lose the series. People, it's the game 3 overtime that everybody remembers.
Yeah,
it actually wasn't funny. An overtime. It was late in the game, right?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, there's so much memorable about that Canada Cup. How great they were, how great Larry Murphy was.
Yep.
Larry Murphy was obviously a very good player. He's in the Hall of Fame. So at the Hall of Fame, they have this voiceover booth. So you can go in and call some of the great goals of all time. And by the way, that was the late Dan Kelly on that call.
Oh, brilliant.
How good was he?
Yeah.
But you can go in and call some of the games, and my voice narrates it for you to guide you through it. So when it opened, Larry Murphy was at the Hall of Fame, and his call was on the game three winner was Gretzky drops to Lemieux, Mario, I'm open. Good shot, Mario. Because if you look at the video of it, Larry Murphy is wide open at the side of the net.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember who the defenseman was? He might be listening right now. The defenseman was who was sprawled on the ice between the two of them.
Who sat down? Was it Gusarov?
I think it was Kravchuk. I got to check. I thought it was Igor. I thought it was Igor who lives in Montreal.
Yeah, but Larry Murphy is standing alone at the side of the net, and Mario shoots that puck from like 50 feet. So, yeah, but that hockey was terrific, obviously. And that was sort of peak offense in the NHL, still sort of peak Soviet hockey with, you know, Larionov. And I don't know if you ever heard the story about Larionov sneaking out of the hotel in Calgary and going for a beer with Gretzky. But Larionov snuck out of his Calgary hotel and went to meet Gretzky for a beer during that Canada Cup.
Just the two of them?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a conversation I would have liked to have. Yeah. I'd like to know more about this. Maybe the first time Wayne Gretzky appears on this show, perhaps with a little bit of help from Gord, we can talk about that.
Igor is one of the most interesting people in the game to talk to. Fascinating, fascinating guy. Remember Kevin Constantine coaching in the NHL. Kevin's a guy, right? He had a specific idea of the way the game should be played and did not deviate from it. So in San Jose, he's running a practice. I'm there, and they're working on defensive positioning. So the idea is you dump the puck in, take your defensive position. So Igor, of course, beats four guys, moves into the offensive zone. Constantine blows the whistle, do it again. So Igor beats four guys again, and Kevin blows the whistle and says, Igor, the idea here is defensive positioning. Dump the puck in and get in your spot. And Igor says, Kevin, best defense is I have the puck.
Touche.
Constantine said, next group.
Yeah. And where is Kevin Constantine coaching these days, by the way?
I believe he was just let go in Everett in the Western League. He was coaching in Everett for a long time in the Western League, but I believe he was let go in the offseason.
All right, so let me finish up. Edmonton and Calgary, of course, was the great rivalry in the 80s, and people in Calgary kind of stunned this week. This whole deal with the new rink falling through at the same time Seattle mentions they're about ready to go, and everybody is under the assumption that the NHL will arrive in Seattle one way or the other in the not-too-distant future. How insecure should hockey fans in Calgary be?
First of all, having gone through this for almost 20 years with Edmonton, when the moving van pulls up to the building in Calgary, call me. Until then, it's all posturing. So I don't think fans in Calgary have much to worry about. I would say, though, the experience in Edmonton is instructive in Calgary. And while they're in the same province, they're very different places. And I think that, there's a mayor election in Calgary in a couple of weeks. The more that their mayor stands up to the Flames and the NHL, the more popular he seems to be. And, there's been a major discussion because basically, from what I understand, if Calgary wants the 2026 Winter Olympics, it can have them. Like, it's a done deal. Calgary can have the 2026 Winter Olympics. And it's a real question whether or not Calgary wants them. And so there's a real sort of strain in Calgary of, you know what, we've got enough financial problems here. We don't need to be handing out welfare to hockey teams or hosting the Olympics. The issue with the arena is, and the mayor brought this up last year, if we're going to build a building for the team, can we get an ownership piece of the team? you know what I mean?
That's a good question.
you look in Montreal, you look in Ottawa, you look in Toronto, those are all privately built buildings.
Yeah, and in fact, news today, another Major League sports franchise, the Oakland A's, they're teetering as well, and they're trying to get a new ballpark built.
But someday, now, the one thing I'd say, Mitch, and I think it was excessive, the Canadians had to pay $11 million for that street that closed when they built the Bell Center.
That's right, and property taxes. That's right.
Yeah, they had to pay the city to close that street. There's no question that the Bell Center brings tremendous financial benefit to downtown Montreal, right? I mean, in terms of,
I don't think anybody would argue
around
that.
Yeah. No one would argue that. So there is an interest on the part of a municipality to be part of it. But the question, pay 80% of it so an NHL team can get fat on a new building? I don't think so. And so someday, Mitch, this welfare for pro sports teams, primarily in the United States, is going to run out. And we've already seen it in communities where people have voted down public financing for stadiums and ballparks especially.
And that's the reason I just want to jump in. That's the reason I mentioned Oakland is because the latest plan to build a ballpark is basically about private financing.
Right.
Which is what San Francisco did.
Exactly. And I think San Francisco had 3 referenda, if that's the plural of referendum, on public financing for a football stadium for the 49ers, and all 3 failed.
And that's why they're not there.
But the problem is, and Brian Burke made this point, he's not wrong, that you're competing against teams that are getting these financed arenas. So you're playing on a non-level field. When you're playing against a team that got an arena handed to them and gets all the revenue from it and doesn't have the debt to service, that's a very different financial situation than a team that has to make the outlay. I'm not saying it's right that those teams are getting those taxpayer-supported buildings, but the playing field's not level. And, I remember doing a story years ago, Mitch, on Charlotte, North Carolina. They built the Carolina Panthers, that football stadium, to get that team. They gave them the stadium, the naming rights. They gave them a tax-free practice facility for something like 20 years. That county in Charlotte had some of the worst public schools in America.
Always food for thought from Gord Miller every Wednesday at 6:05. Maybe I'll see you on the weekend.
Really?
Well, maybe, if you have time.
It's a day game. It's a day game, so you could come. Because we all know, you don't come out at night. So.
Not to Molson Stadium. Not to Molson Stadium.
Am I wrong, Rod? Back me up here.
I think you're out on a limb, Gord.
I enjoy my city.
So do I. I love your city. I'll be there Saturday and Sunday.
All right.
Take me out for dinner Saturday night. There you
well,
go.
There you go. Okay, I think I owe you a dinner, don't I?
That's it.
Okay,
that's
it's a date.
Saturday night, we're having our dinner.
At Moishe's.
You owe me.
Okay, done. This will be fun, I think. That was you were there when this went down, right, Gallo? Were you not there when this went down?
Yes, I was. I'm trying to think about exactly when it happened.
Well, it was the playoffs, and it was possible.
I remember now. It's because I told Gord that the only guaranteed first round victory was the Washington Capitals beating the Maple Leafs.
That's right. And what did he say?
Anything can happen, and you never know when it comes to a playoff series. And then he picked, what was it, Washington, Pittsburgh.
And then I took another team from each division.
Oh, he's still there.
I'm still here, guys.
Yeah, anyway, I lost the bet. So Gord will collect on Saturday night at Moishe's. A better call.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Comfort is personal. A city, a home, a chair. But if the temperature's not right,